Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Whoa, we are back. Play Tessie is back as promised. This is episode 140 of Play Tessie. If you're listening on drop day, it is October 14th. This is the official podcast of the third best team in Boston. It's not the worst. I think we can unequivocally say that's the Patriots. Even though the offense may have shown some signs today, that team absolutely stinks. And the Red Sox are not as bad as the Patriots, even as they stand right now, fully eliminated. Also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, remember, hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars and subscribe, as well as going on YouTube on the WEEI page. We've got a Play Tessie playlist there where you can find all of our episodes. So you can hit the like on those videos as well. And as always, at Play Tessie on all of the socials, on Twitter and Instagram. So I'm here with Sammy and I'm here with Pat. This is the longest period of time we've gone without recording a podcast, by a lot, I will say, since we started this. It took us 139 episodes to take more than like 3 or 4 days. Maybe there might have been one like 4 or 5 day stretch or something. We took like a week and a half. We took a little bit of a breather to catch our breath after the season ended. We did the postseason or post regular season press conference podcast where we reacted to all those quotes, and that was a whole thing. And since then, a lot has been said. I think it's fair to say, and you guys can tell me if you disagree here, I think the Red Sox are talking a pretty big game. I think they're trying not to. They're not getting into specifics about the payroll and stuff like that. But if you listened to the entirety of the press conferences from this year and like all of the interviews that Breslow has done this year and you compare it to the stuff that was said last year, everyone clings to the full throttle thing. I get it. But full throttle was surrounded by a lot of fence sitting. Like, yeah, we need to be competitive, but it's going to take this and this. Like, they didn't say we're going to go out and spend $1 billion. The full throttle thing was one line, and we hung on to it the entire offseason. But I feel like this year, they're saying a lot of the same stuff over. Like, they're saying, this is it, the last struggle. They've said that a million times. Our fans have been through enough. They've said that a million times. We need to be prepared to not focus solely on the future. We need to sacrifice future wins to win in the present. They've said that multiple times over and over. They've had chances to hear themselves say it and say, oh, probably shouldn't have said that. We're not going to say that again. But they're choosing to say it over and over again. So I personally think they're talking a pretty big game this offseason. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, it's undeniable. I mean, I don't want to say they're setting themselves up for failure, but we already have big expectations heading into 2025. And the way Breslow specifically, the way he's been talking, saying that the time is now, kind of telling everyone listening, anyone who will listen, that they're going to spend, and that could be in the form of money, free agents, or prospects. We don't know. But man, like, full throttle is one thing. This has been like an array of promises, I guess you could say, or, you know, leaving little breadcrumbs worth of promises. So Breslow, first season was kind of weird, you know, rookie GM, whatever. Year two, he is talking a heck of a game. And if you're like me, I personally don't really read much at all into these quotes that kind of go in one ear and out the other. But in general, if you're saying these kinds of things, like the last struggle, like Cora said, you better know something, or you better have plans to make a splash or two, because it's been, when was the last time we kind of felt good about the team heading into a season? Probably 2019 was the last
absolutely
time. This is the team. They're going to contend. Not like a, hey, maybe this team, if everything goes right, maybe they can fight down the stretch for a wild card spot. I'm sick of that. I think everyone is sick of that. So these guys are talking a big game. Put up or shut up.
Yeah, no, that should be every fan's approach to this. And I don't want to tell you all how to think. But even though I think they are going to do what at least they think they can to put a good team on the field, I would advise caution, just because, You know, last year we had Full Throttle. The year before we had Kike saying that Haim told him that the team was going to be, quote, way better next year. And neither of those things came to fruition. So I will advise caution, but I think that they're going to do things to make the team considerably better. I don't know that that necessarily means spending. So they may not, at least the way I think, make the team significantly better in the way that we all want to see them do it, which in a perfect world would be keep your prospects and bring them up and then supplement it by paying multiple awesome starting pitchers and an awesome right-handed bat. I don't know if we're going to get that, but I do think they're going to try to make the team a lot better. I'm proceeding with caution, but I mean, it's hard to say all these things over and over again and then not back it up.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is they've kind of had a little bit of a change in tone over like the last week, because at the exit presser, they were saying starting pitching depth, we want to win the division. Like, it was very like vague goals. Like, pitching depth did not rile me up. I did not stand up for we're going to add arms. Like, no shit. Like, this is known. But over the last week, we're getting, when was the last time, in all seriousness, we heard a GM not emphasize the future or our prospects are developing, our young core is coming? This is the first year since probably 2020 where they have outright said, we no longer can afford to look to the future. The time is now. That, I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting.
You're right.
And then you have Breslow just outwardly saying, you know, like, we're not struggling anymore. We have prospect capital. We have cash. I'm like, okay, that's new. We didn't hear that. We haven't heard that in years. Cora, this is the last year of struggle. There's been a lot more. The Full Throttle thing, that was legitimately the only line said last offseason that even remotely indicated big moves coming. We now have had like 5 or 6 Full Throttle-esque quotes in the last like 5 days. Like, that's not a slip up. That is a mantra. And I'm with Sammy. Normally I'm like, okay, like, talk all you want. I'll believe it when I see it. But when they're talking a game like this, it's kind of hard to think that they're overdoing it and saying like, we're going to add a number 5 pitcher. Like, that's what, like, it sounds like big things are coming and big moves with prospects or cash, which we deserve.
Yeah. To clarify, I'm not saying I believe anything that Breslow or the front office is saying. I'm just saying these guys are really, really talking up big game. And like, do you think anyone believes them anymore? Because I'm looking on like social media, listening to the radio just around town. It sounds like nobody believes them anymore. So I said earlier, they're really setting themselves up for failure if they don't come through. But really, how much more distrusted could this group be? Like, nobody's buying what they're selling. So I feel like there really is nothing they could say that would change how much people trust them at this point. Maybe they could lose a little bit more favor, those last few people who somehow still believe anything these guys say. Maybe they'd lose that faction of people, but man, like, how could you possibly believe anything these guys say after the last few seasons? I can't even do the mental gymnastics to talk myself into it.
It's a good point you make. Like, if they don't come through and they don't make big additions, really, what more can they lose? They're as an ownership group and even as a front office, whether you think it's deserved or not, like, the trust level with them is about as low as possible. The one thing that I will say is, regardless of the moves that they make, the one thing that I'm going to keep coming back to, regardless of what they do, is that in previous years, like, you can go listen to the Full Throttle press conference and the post press conference interviews, and they talk about, we need to be competitive. That's the wording they would use, and they've used that the last several seasons, is we need to put a competitive team on the field. This off, like, the difference now, they're telling you, we need to win we're going to win the division. We need to put a team out there that's capable of winning the division. They're putting a specific goal, and it's not just make the playoffs. It's a loftier goal. It's like, we don't want to be in that 3-game playoff. We want to literally go out, get the bye, win the division. And in this division, that's not like that. That means this team being in the playoffs is not a question. It's just, what kind of playoff berth are we talking about? And that's not something that we have felt since literally 2018. like certainty at the end of the season that the Red Sox will be playing postseason baseball. Like 21, we didn't know until the last day that there would be
postseason baseball. These games won't matter. Like we haven't had any in a good way. These games don't matter. All that matters is the playoff games coming up. But one thing I want to point out, the issue with this kind of PR speak that Breslow and the rest of the front office do, it kind of reminds me, bear with me here, when people talk about the GOAT in sport, in like basketball, for example. Someone will say like LeBron's the GOAT. No, Jordan. No, Kobe. And the problem with these arguments is it's whoever you want it to be. There's no definition for the GOAT. And you can use that same logic on the word competitive. There's no definition for competitive. So what is competitive? Because in 2023, their record wasn't drastically different from 2024. You can make an argument that they were competitive in 2023 and then 2024, 500 right on the dot. Is that competitive? You can make an argument that it is. You can make an argument that it isn't. So when you have these broad terms that need to be defined and frankly can't really be defined in a specific way, kind of leaves some wiggle room for Breslow and his team. So I get it. I want to believe that competitive means competing for the like the division, let's say. But he could just turn around and say, well, we were competitive this year. We were in it right until the end.
Well, Sammy, the difference, though, is that they're literally saying the division this year. Like they've said win the division like at least like 10, 12 times, like just combined between the three of Kennedy, Breslow, Cora. Like right now, my expectation is they're going to put it like if they're going to live up to their promise, they're putting a team out there that we think entering the season can win the division. And if we don't think that, then they better prove us wrong. Like maybe we won't think it, but they signed like the next the guy they think is going to be this year's Seth Lugo. And that guy becomes an ace. And we didn't think that would happen, but they were right. Like I'm either expecting we're going to think this is a division winning team or they're going to prove us wrong. And if neither of those happens, then yeah, they lied to us and it's a failure.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is like the whole last couple of years, the competitive team, like nowhere in those quotes did that ever indicate to anybody like, oh, they're going to for the division. They're going to make some big moves. A competitive team is such like an umbrella cop-out answer. Like every team, I guess, is competitive. The way they're talking this year so far sounds like a team that knows their big market. Like they're going for the division. They will make moves. And I think one thing, not that this is going to influence their decision whatsoever, but people are like, oh my God, don't let Craig and FSG see like the Tigers and the Royals and the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Spoiler alert, the three highest payrolls in baseball are playing in the championship series. That's where you need to be. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can take the risk. You can play that mid-market bullshit and you can try and get the Tigers, the Royals, or the Diamondbacks last year their way into the playoffs. Or you can put your money where your mouth is and guarantee that, yeah, we have a damn good roster. Mm-hmm. We're making the playoffs. We're going for the division.
And people say like, oh, spending money doesn't mean you're going to make the playoffs. And that's true. Makes it a hell of a lot easier, though. And that's not debatable. That is not even a question. If you spend money, you put a better team on the field, makes it easier to make the playoffs. Like you said, Pat, the top three payrolls are in the playoff or in the championship series, I should say, even better. You want to be like those teams. You don't want to be like the Tigers, the outlier team. That's not sustainable. So agree with what you said.
Yeah, and you see these outlier teams. It's like they make the playoffs this year. And then like the Guardians didn't make the playoffs last year. They are payroll-wise, the outlier team this year. And who knows if they'll be back next year. There's going to be like I guess Shane Bieber's not a part of the team this year, but they're going to lose guys because they're not going to be willing to pay guys. They only really extend the guys who signed super early. Like Andrés Giménez was kind of the biggest kind of contract that they gave out. But with the Red Sox specifically, you go into this offseason, they're $60 to $65 million next year below the luxury tax line. I have no idea. I don't think anyone knows if John Henry is willing to get to that line. Maybe he is, but maybe he's not willing to go over. Maybe he still has a budget that's 10, 12, 15 million below that line. But I want to ask you guys because we're going to keep it pretty general because we're going to have a whole offseason to get super specific about these things. Like we're going to be putting out so many podcasts where we can get super specific each position. But generally, let's make some predictions here about the path. And I'll go first so you guys know kind of what I'm asking for. To me, I don't think that they're either they're not going to want to convince John Henry to invest in a 30-year-old starting pitcher, or they are going to try and John Henry's not going to be sold. I don't think that they invest financially in one of the big aces on the market, the Corbin Burns, Max Fried, Blake Snell, those types of guys. I don't think they do that. I do think they get a frontline guy. Craig Breslow has this offseason talked about their need for a number one, although he kind of hedges a little bit by saying he thinks that some of the guys on the team have shown that they could take that next step forward into becoming that. But I think he's not going to take that chance. I think he's going to get a guy via trade that people see as a number one. My personal prediction is Garrett Crochet. I know that we've heard rumbling. I mean, there was legitimate buzz about conversations that the Red Sox had with the White Sox at the trade deadline about him. And Craig Breslow at the postseason press conference talked about, quote, revisiting conversations. So maybe that's a conversation that he'll revisit. I like the idea of Garrett Crochet. I really like the idea of Garrett Crochet if they would extend him, which obviously a separate issue. So I think that's how they get the starting pitcher. I think they don't give out a qualifying offer, even though I would give out the qualifying offer to O'Neill. I think they sign a right-handed bat. Maybe it's Teoscar Hernandez, though I don't think people are paying enough attention to the fact that he probably will get and decline the qualifying offer himself, which complicates things. But I think they're going to spend the most of their money on a legitimate right-handed bat, not like Bregman or Pete Alonso, but a legitimate right-handed bat. And I think they're going to pay a legitimate reliever. I think, like Chris Cotillo reported about the Red Sox potentially going big on a left-handed reliever, I can say that that's something that I've heard as well, that they really do want a legitimate high-end left-handed reliever with swing and miss stuff that you can go to in the later innings. When the eighth inning comes around and the other team has a big left-handed bat due up, think like when Juan Soto comes up to the plate, who do you want out there in the eighth inning of a one-run game facing Juan Soto? Tanner Scott comes to mind.
You mean if the Red Sox are playing the Mets and Juan Soto comes up next year?
Yeah, exactly.
Sammy, exactly.
Gunnar Henderson. But yeah, I think that's where they spend the money. Right-handed bat, reliever. I think they trade for the starter and maybe some other stuff around the fringes, but that's what I think. I think that's the approach.
If the Red Sox trade for Garrett Crochet, I will be the happiest person on the planet. That is my... I have one and 1A. Garrett Crochet, Max Fried. If they get either of those guys, I'll legitimately cry on the podcast, tears of joy. That'll be beautiful. Exactly what they need. So it's probably not going to happen.
If you had to put your money on the table, and by the way, just a quick little, not a spoiler. It's like a sneak peek. I don't know. We've got a little tidbit coming later from a little clip from mine and Bradfo's interview with Lucas Giolito about Max Fried. So stay tuned for that. But Sammy, if you're putting your money on the table, what do you think goes down?
Okay. I got kind of I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I think 2025, you are going to have an entirely new catching tandem. I think that Connor Wong's defense did not improve from 2023 to 2024. In fact, it actually got worse metrics-wise, which is bad because he was already not great in 2023. So I think that with an eye on the pitching staff, you look at what they did in AAA last year. They got two or three defensive specialist catchers to handle the staff in AAA. I think they're going to do something similar in 2025, the big league team. I don't think it's going to be Danny Jansen. It might be Danny Jansen. Might not be. It's certainly not going to be Kyle Teal to start the season as the starting catcher. That is a hell of a lot to ask of a young kid. So whether it's a veteran they bring in and Kyle Teal, whether it's, you know, Jansen and Kyle Teal, I think you're going to see a new tandem. Well, Danny Jansen would mean it's not an entirely new catching tandem. Regardless, point remains, it's going to be a new catching tandem. I don't think it's going to be Wong. And if it is Wong, I don't think he's going to be the catcher for the entire season. I don't think they're going to let the pitching staff go through another season with a poor defensive catcher. And it's nothing against Connor Wong. It's just like he's got a lot of good traits to him that could keep him on a major league roster for a long time. But you saw at the end of the year, they're kind of grooming him to be a utility guy who's playing second base, a little bit of third, first base. Wouldn't shock me if they put him in the outfield in spring training. So a new catching tandem is my bold prediction, hot take, if you want to call it that.
All right. To add further context to that, the Red Sox, in terms of fielding run value, 29th out of 30 in catcher defense last year. It was
wow.
Who's and that's oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. Okay. I'll try to look for it for you. But yeah, the Red Sox were 29th in catcher defense, 29th in second base defense, 28th in shortstop defense, 26th in third base defense, 20th in first base defense. So if you want to look at why the infield was bad, it was everybody. Like, and like you could look at for a number of reasons. Like Trevor Story wasn't on the field for most of the season, so that's why shortstop was bad. They had a revolving door that included a lot of Emmanuel Valdez at second base. That's why that was bad. Rafi Devers is at third, so that's not going to ever be a spot where they're going to rank in the top half of the league defensively. But and first base, Costas was not there for the majority of the season. Dom Smith played a solid defensive first base. Costas is eh. There's paths to improve there, but catcher is the one spot where like you can look at the roster, besides third base, where you can look at the roster and say there is not a path unless they do something where this is going to get better, at least until Teal comes up. But Pat, what's your take here? Going into the offseason, what is something you think generally is going to happen here with the Sox?
I think that one, if not two, of the big four are traded.
Ooh.
And I think that comes in, whether it be a Crochet, whether that be as the centerpiece to one of the Mariners guys. I think they've made it abundantly clear that they have a lot of depth there, in meaning the top of the farm. You have the big four. Everybody knows them. Campbell Teal, Anthony Meyer, whatever. You have Braden Montgomery, who you just drafted, who should have been a top 5-7 pick, who fell to you at 12, 14, wherever. You have Franklin Arias, who looks like he's going to be a monster. You have Yoelín Cespedes, who's like 18 and climbing the ranks before he got hurt. You have Miguel Blaze, who still has, I would say, like one of the top 3 to 5 highest ceilings in the entire system. You have so many guys already at the top and so many guys slowly getting there that you can afford to move those guys. I'm not moving Roman. I'm making that abundantly clear.
What do you think they move it for, Pat?
It's going to be for starting pitching. I think if they can figure out how to extend Crochet before the deal, I think Crochet is like the perfect scenario, because if you go to Seattle, they're going to want major league pieces. That's mm-hmm. where it's going to get messy. You could, sure, maybe you do a Duran and an Arias for a Miller, like, but I don't think they want to subtract from the major league team, especially when the farm is so, so deep. So I think it's Crochet if they can iron out the frameworks of an extension so he'll actually pitch.
They can't trade for him without that. Like, I think you don't – if you're not going to extend him right away, don't even trade for him. That makes no – that would be crazy if they – that would be
– yeah.
Oh, my God. I'd be happy they got him, but
– the difference between Crochet and some other guys is, like, with other guys, some guys don't want extensions. Like, if they had traded for Max Fried before this season – guess what? He's not signing an extension. He wanted to hit free agency. He was the one guy the Braves didn't get to extend. They try to extend everybody. But with Crochet, you already know he wants the extension. It's perfect.
And he's like, what?
25, 200 strikeout guy. I think it went like 13 strikeouts over 9 innings. And by the way, this guy, the most innings he had ever pitched before 2024 was 54.1. And he went over that by 80. So I'm not really worried about the pitch limit that was put on him either. Of course, he's going to be on a pitch limit. He had Tommy John in 21 or 22. So, yeah, he was on a pitch limit as he should have been. Still look great. I can't. He's such a good fit. Same age as like Bayo, Hauk, the mid to late 20s.
Thing, too, comparatively to like a Fried or, I mean, I don't think there's a shot in hell to get Corbin Burnes, but a Corbin Burnes. That's the kind of pitcher that you can actually give an 8-year deal in the last 2-3 years, not bite you in the ass. Because end of 8 years, he's 32, 33.
But also, Pat, you have to look at the fact that, like, Sam, you just talked about how they cut down his innings because he'd never, what was his previous career high? Like
54.1. 50,
okay. So this is like, go look at Corbin Burnes' career innings. And then, like, yeah, I guess I get it. Everyone wants, and when Craig Breslow described the number one guy, he said a guy who can give you 30 plus starts, give you 200 or so innings, and keep you in the game every single time. And I get it. Crochet has not proven to this point that he can go 200 innings. But with a guy like him, where the stuff plays and where he pitched the entire season this year and didn't get hurt, you can get that guy on the up and come of his innings. Like, it's like, yeah, Corbin Burnes has proven that he can get to 200 innings, but he's done it so many times that how much longer can he reasonably be effective? Whereas Crochet, it's like, yeah, Pat, that's why you can extend him for 8 years, because he doesn't have that wear and tear on his arm.
146 innings this year. It's not like he pitched 100. He pitched quite a bit this year. So I'm not, I think that's totally overblown. I would be more concerned if he didn't have an innings limit on him this year and the White Sox were like, just go nuts, man. And also, I know this is kind of a controversial thing maybe, but people have split opinions. He's already had Tommy John, which in my opinion, probably a good thing, because most guys get Tommy John nowadays. He's already kind of gotten it over with. You could look at it like that. Doesn't bother me one bit. That's just how it works nowadays. 5 years ago, it would have freaked me out. Not anymore.
Well, the thing is, to get a guy like Crochet, and Pat brought this up, he said his take is that he thinks one or two of the big four prospects get dealt this offseason. You're not going to get, like, maybe you can try to build a Crochet deal around, like, Willier Cutter and, like, Yoelian Cespedes or something like that. I don't think you're going to be able to get him without dipping into one of the big four. But I'm going to ask you guys this question. Should Red Sox fans be willing to accept it? Like, I think I know how we feel, because we all just kind of stated why we kind of like Crochet over the big free agent arm. But should, like, there, this was a discussion I saw on Twitter where it's like, should Red Sox fans accept that the team would rather deal their top prospects rather than spend the money needed to get that frontline guy?
I just think that's a bizarre way to look at it. Crochet is the best fit out of all these guys, in my opinion, regardless of how he's acquired. He's, like I said, same age as most of the pitching staff. He's left-handed, which is huge. A lot of strikeouts, which is big at Fenway. Hitters ballpark, you need to be striking guys out. So I don't even think about it that way. That's, to me, it's like taking it personal almost. Like, you're still not going to spend, but then the Red Sox will be like, well, we're getting the ace that we need. What are you talking about? We're making the team better. Isn't that what you want? That's how I would look at it. Just make the team better. I don't care how it's done. I'm not gonna complain if they don't spend money on. I want them to spend, whether it's money or trading prospects. Just get that ace and make the team better. I don't care how.
Well, I asked this question, and it's like, this isn't going to be me straddling the fence on this or anything. I think it's good to trade for pitching when it's young, because these guys flame out way, way earlier than bats. Like, look at the successful long-term contracts for hitters and pitchers. Like, you can only name a few pitchers that really took it to the end of their deals, where if you get a great young starter and extend him, like Crochet could get extended, and now he's hitting the free agent market at 32, 33, whereas if you sign Corbin Burnes to an 8-year deal, he's 38. My thing is, I'm okay if you trade the prospects to get Garrett Crochet, but guess what? Crochet's not going to be making much money next year. I want to see that payroll up. I don't want to see uncertainty on the roster. I don't want to see a lineup that can't hit left-handed pitching. I don't want to see a lineup that strikes out with the worst 3 to 5 teams in the league. If you're not going to spend the money to upgrade the pitching, you're going to spend the prospects to upgrade the pitching. I want to see you spend money to fix what we saw in the offense late in the season. I want to see you spend money to get that left-handed reliever. There is an elite left-handed reliever out there, and I've never been the type of guy to say invest in relievers, because those contracts, I feel like, fail early more than any. But you need what you need. Like, the payroll should be at the top of the league. I'm okay if you don't feel like spending on a 30-year-old starting pitcher, spending big money on big years for a 30-year-old starting pitcher. I am fine if you don't think that's a good investment. But what's not okay with me is you making the money that you make owning this team and not at least spending to the luxury tax line. And even that shouldn't be acceptable, because they've been under it. Like, I should be demanding that they go over it. I'm being nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather them go over it and spend, but just make the team better. I don't really care how it's done. You know what I was thinking about the other day on the topic of Garrett Crochet? You guys remember last offseason, we were talking about Yoshinobu Yamamoto ad nauseum, just nonstop talking about this guy, because on top of being a stud pitcher, he was 25. And we kept saying, you never get an opportunity to acquire a 25-year-old ace, period. It's so rare that you acquire an ace like that. Most of the time you get them like Max Fried when they're 30 and they hit free agency. By the grace of whatever God you believe in, they have another chance to get a 25-year-old ace in Garrett Crochet. And it's just like, you may not have this opportunity for another 15 years. And you got it now back-to-back years. Hope they don't fuck it up.
All right, I want to hear Pat's take. Pat, should people accept that they're potentially leaning towards trading some of their elite prospects on for pitching rather than just signing it?
Yeah, I mean, there's two different routes for me. One of which is this: that is very clearly the best route to improve the team, both in the starting pitching department and everything else. Because if you trade from depth to acquire your ace, you have all of that freed up money to go get your Tanner Scott, your Willy Adames, your Bregman, whatever you want. If you don't do that and you go and get freed, I don't think they're going to be shelling out massive contracts. Then you're turning to the trade market for guys who are available. You're looking for a strikeout lefty who ideally is under control. Like, it's just a mess. If you go and get freed, you can pay whoever you want to upgrade everywhere else. The other part of this has never been a thing before. I think because over the last 3 or 4 years, ownership, front office, whoever the chief, the CBO was, whether it be Heim or Bloom, or Heim or Breslow, they have done nothing but emphasize the next young core are exciting prospects. So now people are emotionally attached to them, and that's hard to deal with. I get that. No one batted an eye when we traded the number one prospect in baseball for Chris Sale. That's because we had a damn good team and other guys on the team, so no one cared.
So true. Nobody cared at all. Everyone like, Chris Sale? Oh, my God.
So now it's to the point where, okay, these kids who we've been told that are like our entire future, you're going to trade them? You can't do that. Yes, they can, because if they trade them, you get your ace. You have money to spend to get the other stars, to get the leadership, to get the reliever. It's so – I don't get why people are so against trading the prospects when it so easily upgrades the team right now.
But you also have to. Like, you also have
to. You just saw – like you just mentioned it, Pat. Chris Sale, you just saw Dave Dombrowski a few years ago with the Red Sox very willingly trade the prospects for major league talent. And what did that lead to? Literally the best Red Sox team in the history of the very old Boston Red Sox, who are even older than me. So I don't know. Like, I feel like Heim Bloom's tenure kind of warped the way people look at prospects, not in a good or bad way. It's just very different. And I was like that too. When the Heim Bloom started, I remember thinking like, yeah, keep all these guys. I can take a year or two of, you know, not the best Red Sox team, as long as you get 7-8 years of contention. But this is too much. This has been a lot of incompetent teams on the field. I just want to see them cash in. So I don't know how people are possibly still thinking different that way.
The thing is, they're at a different place now. Like in 2022, they had a bunch of spots on the team. Like, do you remember Heim entered the offseason? He's like, we need to sign like 7 or 8 guys this offseason.
After 21?
I think it might have been after 22 going into 23. Because I don't think they made the playoffs that year. So I think they didn't make the playoffs the year before Heim said this. So I think it's after 22 going into 23. And he said, we have like 7 or 8 spots we have to fill this offseason. Everyone was like, oh, let's go. Like 7 or 8 new players. But actually, it's like, no, they did get guys, but it's like when you have to get that many guys, it's like you have to invest in mid because you can't get 7 or 8. You can't trade for 7 or 8 really good players. You can't sign 7 or 8 really big contracts. So you're stuck with like 1 year guys like Michael Wacha, I think might have been, or no, it was Michael Wacha, whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah, like whatever. The difference now. Yeah. The difference now is they've got guys committed to positions. They can't go, like, if they wanted to try to go a year without trading someone from the outfield mix, like they in theory could, and guy like maybe Roman would be in AAA longer than you would think, or like guys maybe like you'd have to rely on guys getting hurt. I don't know, but you could do it, but the roster doesn't fit that well if you do it. There's going to be guys unhappy with their playing time if you don't do it, so they kind of have to trade guys. This isn't this is different. Like in the past, you didn't have to trade anything. If you traded things, like if they traded Marcelo Meyer when he was like their only top 50-ish prospect, like before Roman, like that's just bad business. That's asking for to be an unsustainable team. Whereas now, like you could trade Marcelo Meyer and guess what? You still have your entire infield locked up.
Yeah, it's like they waited the max, like they've waited it all the way out to where it's at a boiling point on the roster and it's kind of a log jam. And that's not a bad thing in terms of the roster. It's a bad thing that we had to wait this long. I think they could have added last year and made the 2024 team competitive. I mean, they definitely could have. The 81 win team, you add a decent bat and a pitcher, things could be different. But yeah, I agree, Gordo. It's different now. You really don't even have a choice. You have to move guys. You only have so many roster spots.
Yep. And I think the reason we have these conversations, I think the three of us all agree they're more likely to, at least when it comes to pitching, trade for it than sign it. However,
I don't know if I agree. However, I don't know. It's because pitching is such a premium in a trade. I don't know if they're going to be willing to go that all in. I think it might be more likely that John Henry reverts back to like, all right, fine, just this one time, but we'll see.
Well, if you want to have hope that the Red Sox might be in on a premium pitching free agent, Rob Bradford and I for Baseballs and Boring we talked to Lucas Giolito, and that podcast, I believe, dropped when you're listening to this. I believe it dropped today. So it is on Baseballs and Boring. You can click on that as soon as you're done with this podcast. And we asked Giolito about his former high school teammate, Max Fried. Joe, do you have that clip for us?
Let's do an exercise. Gordo, you're going to appreciate this one. I'm a guy named Max. My last name happened to be Fried. Tell me, give me your pitch. He's going to ask you.
What, you think I haven't already talked to him about it?
Right. That's crazy. Yeah, of course you have, right? So I feel like we're doing, I feel like we're doing a service. We're workshopping even more. So
I do like this exercise.
You can already, if you want, you can just repeat what you said to him. I'm just giving you an opportunity.
No, I can't do all that, man. No. I'll say, like, don't you want to, you know, we played high school ball together and we always talked about how cool it would be if we'd be on the same team. In the big leagues, when we legitimate conversations we would have when we were 17. So let's, you know, this is the shot to make it a reality right here.
So there you have it, man. Ooh. Lucas Giolito, like Rob, the way Rob phrased that was like, give us your pitch that you would give Giolito. And he's like, bro, you think I haven't already done it?
Yes.
Like, come
it's
on.
Our guy, dude. Whoo. That's exciting, man. I hope he has. I mean, Max Fried, kind of an asshole if you don't sign with the Red Sox. You're crushing your high school friend's dream. So uproot your life and move to Boston, or else probably not a good guy. So
I have a question for you guys. Do you think that do you think that Lucas Giolito would only do this if he was given the like indication from the organization that there was at least that they were at least going to make a run at him? Like, do you think he would go? Like, would do you think? Is this a stretch that I don't think he would go out and like try to recruit Max Fried to the Red Sox without at least talking to like Alex Cora or someone in the front office? Like, hey, like, are you guys interested in this? Because like, I'll talk to him.
No, I don't think he would. I don't think the front office is telling Giolito anything. I think it's just his friend, and it's as simple as that. He's just saying, hey, man, come to the Red Sox. And, you know, in all likelihood, not to be a Debbie Downer, it probably won't matter. Max Fried, he's going to go where he's the best fit, where he gets the money he wants. So, no, I don't think he's talking to Giolito's talking in the front office about it.
Yeah, I think I learned my lesson from Matt Judon. Matt Judon recruited every son of a bitch under the sun, and not one of them came here. Don't get me wrong. I think if it's like the money's even, like let's say Atlanta offers him similar money, or maybe not Atlanta because he would probably go back. But like, let's just say like Dodgers. If he gets the same exact offer sheet from the Dodgers and the Red Sox, could Giolito's, you know, connection, the recruit, could that be this swaying option? Yeah, it could be. But I don't think he's foregoing all other options and coming here because of Giolito.
Imagine he takes like $90 million less just to hang out with his friend. Yeah.
For, one year, years, for 1 year, too. For 1 year. For 1 year, too.
Yeah, it's like the conversation when people are like, if you don't bring back Xander, there's no way Rafael Devers is going to re-sign with the Red Sox. Like, imagine Devers was like, $330 million? Nah, I want to stand next to my friend more. I'm going to turn that down. It's just not how it works. It's a business with huge amounts of money, and money talks.
Yeah. So hopefully, and like I responded after that, if you go listen to the podcast, I was like, yeah, you know what you got to tell him is, you know, Lucas Giolito, he's pitched 2 playoff games in Boston. What better than to make it a reality of those two fulfilling their dream of being MLB teammates than Max Fried being the thing that pushes the Red Sox into playoff contention, and then they get to pitch playoff baseball in Boston, a place unlike any other for postseason environments. So I don't know. We'll see. I think it's certainly not a bad thing that Lucas Giolito is talking to Max Fried about potentially signing with the Red Sox. So keep that in mind when you start hearing all those rumors about if the Red Sox ever express interest in Max Fried, if you ever see that reported anywhere, just remember, heard it here first and on Baseballs and Boring, that Lucas Giolito talking to Max Fried about potentially joining the Red Sox. So shall we transition to Nuff Said before we get on out of here? Do you guys have anything? Because I'll go last if you guys do.
Yeah, I will. I'll go. I have a just question for you guys. It's kind of broad. We heard rumblings from, I think it was Sam Kennedy. Gordo, we were discussing this a few weeks ago about maybe not having a winter weekend, whether it's this year or next year, like getting rid of it eventually. I don't understand why the Red Sox would do that for a few reasons. One, a big part of winter weekend is like seeing the season ticket holders, chatting with them, making sure they're happy, because that's your most important paying customer on an individual level. And two, they have to be making a lot of money off of this between sponsors and like the food and stuff they sell. I know it's also like they partner with the casino in Springfield and everything, but like it has to be a moneymaker. They're selling the tickets as well. So I don't understand why they would get rid of winter weekend. I know people are going to say, well, it's because Red Sox fan booed John Henry. Well, the next year he just didn't show up. So that's solved. I don't get why they're doing it. I would be really, really sad if they got rid of it. And I think it would suck if the new winter weekend-ish thing was at Fenway in fucking January, freezing cold. There's pretty much no indoor spots at Fenway. The whole place is outside, or at least kind of sort of outside. Like there's a wall facing outside, or there's no, you get the point. I really hope winter weekend doesn't go away. We've had great times there. Like legitimate great memories from winter weekend. I think a lot of people agree, have had similar experiences, and people will say, I don't want to go all the way out to Springfield. It's worth it. I have a great time every year. So, wanted to get your guys' thoughts. I hope they keep Winter Weekend 5 ever. What do you guys think?
The sad news, Sammy, is that in Sean McAdams' piece on Sunday, he confirmed again that it is going away and that it's going to be probably replaced with something at Fenway. So it was like his Some Things I Think article. So he was just listing off some things that he thinks, and that was one of the things that he thinks.
Like he thinks it or he knows it?
He said it's not officially announced yet, but it's all but a certainty that it's gone, or at least in the So I mean, it sucks. I tend to think that maybe they're trying to change it because it's just become a hotbed for like Red Sox negativity over the last couple of years. I think it's kind of is what you said, because even though John Henry didn't show up, people still booed a bunch, and it was still just like a hotbed for, you know, shitting on everything Red Sox. So like they're gonna try something new. I'm not happy about it. Those are some of the best. Like, we had great times there, man. It's not going to be the same. Whatever the hell they do, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, that sucks, because it's indoors at a casino in Springfield. You're interacting with the players outside of, you know, baseball and Fenway. And then now instead, we're most likely going to have to cram into Fenway in the middle of January.
Freezing cold.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, that sucks. Thanks, Gordo.
Nah, yeah, I'm sorry, man.
You know it sucks even more?
Well, I won't say.
So today, as I do every Sunday, went and watched football with my friends all day. And I'm not a gambler. I dabble on Sundays. You know, I throw a couple parlays, just make watching a little more interesting. One of my friends today, for the 4 o'clock slate, he's like, oh, like I'm throwing this in. There's like four or five of us that wrote it. So I wrote it. It was a five-leg anytime touchdown score parlay in the 4 o'clock window. Four of the five legs had hit by halftime. The last leg to not hit was Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I thought to myself, oh, they're up 30. There's no way they're going to throw the ball in the second half.
Oh, my God, you cashed it? Oh,
I'm going to cash out. So I tripled my money. You know, I made a nice, nothing crazy, just a little bit. If I let that ride like all of my other friends did and then celebrated afterward, I would have won $2,200.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, Pat.
So I am looking at my low, low, low triple digit payout. My friends are celebrating an over $2,000 parlay win because they wrote it out.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to give you the same response. At least you made money, but fuck, man, that sucks. That
and I had to sit there while everybody is high-fiving, celebrating, and I'm like, I am an idiot.
And it's extra shitty because you probably thought it was going to be the other way around. Like, you'd be like, ah, you guys should have cashed out. I made money. Oh, yeah. You did
it. I saw the cash out option. I'm like, look, that's like triple what I put in. I'm making money. I'll do it. And they're like, no. They're like, the legs have been hitting. Like, we feel good. We're riding it. Oh, like, you guys are idiots. And then the room collectively went up about 10 grand while I just sat there on my thumb.
Well, yeah, I wish I had some inspirational words for you, but that's brutal.
Yeah, no, it sucked. It sucked.
That is so bad. Oh, my God. Poor Pat. Ugh. My enough said before we get out of here. We haven't recorded an episode since Red Sox legend pitcher Louis Tiant passed away within the last, week and a half or so. And, you know, just want to say rest in peace. He is someone who obviously, in my opinion, should be in the Hall of Fame. I think in a lot of people's opinions should be in the Hall of Fame. And I know he had talked, this I saw on Gabriel Starr's Twitter feed, but he had talked about, I hope that I at least get my induction while I'm alive so I can drive to Cooperstown with my family. It's sad that he didn't get that. He deserved it. That guy, you can look at the stats. That man is a Hall of Fame pitcher. And I hope, you know, even if he didn't get in while he's living, I hope that eventually he does get in. This is a guy who never stopped being around the Fenway area, even as he got older. A little bit harder for him to move. He was sick towards the end, but man, yeah, he never shied away from the ballpark. He was always in the legend suite with the little montage, and then everyone gives him the little standing ovation. Like, that's a guy who was always around, happy to talk to fans, past fans who were able to watch him, like you, Sammy, and, you know, fans like me and Pat, who are a little bit too young to have seen him pitch. But yeah, just rest in peace to an absolute legend in Louis Tiant, and he will absolutely be missed around the ballpark.
Yeah, so some context on his case for making the Hall of Fame. First off, not many guys have an iconic windup. He had like the twister, kind of like turn all the way around, look at second base and zip it in. But listen to these numbers. On top of looking cool while he pitched, he was the real deal. 229 wins. I know people don't like hearing about wins, but when it comes to the Hall of Fame, I think people care. 330 ERA, but here's what makes that 330 ERA impressive. 3,486.1 innings pitched. So he maintained a very low ERA for a long, long time. On top of that, 2,416 strikeouts and two ERA titles. So Yeah, I don't know how he's not already in the Hall of Fame. That sounds like a Hall of Famer to me.
It's insane.
Personality Hall of Famer, at least. Like, he seemed like the coolest guy ever. I only got to interact with him a few times. I remember when I was a kid, my dad introducing me to him because he had a Cuban food and hot dog stand outside of Fenway. And I remember I met him and I had no idea who he was. I'm like, cool mustache. And then my dad, the rest of the game, was like, that guy was so good back in the day. You have no idea. He did this cool windup. And then I went home and learned all about Louis Tiant. And yeah, man, sad he never got into the Hall of Fame while he was still with us. But I hope after the fact that he gets his due justice and gets in there. So rest in peace, legend, Red Sox forever. A Mainer at the end of his life. Lived up in Maine, which is very cool. So rest in peace, Louis Tiant. He'll be missed.
So that's going to do it for today's show. We will be back in your ears later this week. I believe we're going to aim to drop an episode Thursday, but keep your eyes out. We're going to do 2 weeks for now. We're going to incorporate a third once the actual start of the baseball offseason gets underway, and we'll be incorporating some good stuff for you in that third episode. But keep your eyes out on Thursday. I think it's going to be Thursday we're dropping our next one. But till then, remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app. Subscribe and rate 5 stars. It really helps us out a ton when you guys do that. Obviously on YouTube, on the WEI page, where you can find all of our episodes on the Play Tessie playlist there. And we are on the socials on both Twitter and Instagram, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. So for Sammy and for Pat and for Joe producing, it's Gordo here. For episode 140 of Play Tessie, our return, our triumphant return. Thanks for tuning into this one, guys. Peace.